I've been invited to speak about policing in a digital age. And in one sense, of course, that's a great transformation. In another sense, it's more of the same. It's a constant challenge, whether it be in London or around the world, to fight criminals. And the job of the police, I think, is to prevent crime happening, and in the event it does, then to deal with it, or to help people in emergencies. We not only fight crime, we do many other things too. And our ambition in the Met is to have a war on criminals, to either stop them succeeding. If we can't manage to stop them succeeding, catch them doing it, to help victims, to be professional in both of those. And finally, we've been allowed over the last 18 months to say we'd have a total use of technology, which is what I'm going to talk about in various ways today. One, in terms of it being a threat, and two, in terms of it being an opportunity. And sometimes we do get caught when talking about cybercrime of thinking it remains a singular threat. But I also do think it's an opportunity for the police and also for others to see how we might intervene in what can be a business threatening and in some terms a very serious crime to all those people who suffer it. We know that we are all living our lives increasingly in cyberspace. And I'm not going to bore you might be pleased to know, with all the statistics that we could say about how the internet, the digital age, has intervened in a positive way in our life. But it will mean a great change for the police and the public in the way our life is transformed in the future. And I just want to talk today about four things. The scale of the task of tackling crime online, the fight against serious and organised crime and terrorism in the digital age, internally what we're doing to modernise our systems and capabilities, particularly in a time of austerity. And you might be also pleased to know that I don't intend to stand here moaning about not having money, but I will mention it in passing. Not because to moan, because I think there are going to be some opportunities too, but it's got to be acknowledged that when we're talking about this area, we are going to all face a serious challenge of financial cuts in the future. And obviously also, and very importantly for police, how externally do the public access our services in this changing world? Do we expect them to continue with the 4.5 million telephone calls we receive a year? We're going to find a different way to engage, which might enhance the service we offer rather than diminish it. As I said, I don't intend to talk an awful lot about the amount of statistics available. We do know that about 40% of the world's population is now online. We're told that 55% of the people use their mobile phone in the morning, but only 3% brush their teeth, which I think is remarkable. A remarkable statistic. I'm tempted actually to just ask this audience this morning whether or not which one they've done. But anyway, crime we know has kept pace with that transformation of technology. Fraud is particularly prevalent online, and I understand that Adrian will consider modern fraud in a little more depth later, so I'll touch on it only briefly as an illustrator of the trend of crime moving online and talk quite a bit more about perhaps the impact around terrorism and some of the other things that we face. So what is the scale of online fraud? Well, in 2014, the Met received 23,000 referrals from Action Fraud. About 70% of those frauds were cyber-enabled. It could be banking or retail sector being defrauded of millions of pounds online, and we do see that. Or it could be some of the other types of online fraud we've seen is romance fraud, which people half smile at times. But it targets vulnerable individuals. We can get two or three per week, often thousands of pounds, and as much as £30,000 transferred to someone they'd fallen in love with online, as we saw in a recent case. We had one case where it was about £1 million had been stolen, and on average each victim had lost £43,000. The money being transferred to America had then gone back to the west coast of Africa. And it just gives, a scale of the damage to the people involved, the victims, and the complexity for the officers who had to then try and intervene in that and try and prove a case across jurisdictions with the technological challenges of collecting evidence, which weren't at all and remain not at all straightforward. We also know that the true extent of online fraud remains difficult to assess. The Deputy Mayor for Policing and some research work they carried out recently in London suggested that businesses only report 12% of the crime affecting them. And some of this audience will know the reasons for that. Sometimes it's a shareholder issue. People don't want to affect their share value. Sometimes they don't want to reveal vulnerability to competitors. But it means collectively we can be in the dark about the fact of the state of the threat and the types of people and the methods of attack. And many of the individuals involved who lose money report their loss to a bank, but a report to the police doesn't always follow. And certainly we would like to see more reporting. I have to say the crime stats wouldn't benefit from that. We know that. But if you don't have truth in crime reporting, you don't have a true assessment of the scale of the challenge. So for us, it's vitally important that we do get those reports and that we do accurately record those reports that we receive. And we know that action fraud, which is a great system, only refers to us, those crimes that they think we can solve. So there are far more cases than the 23,000 that the Met has taken on. So there is a great unseen and a great under-recorded aspect to the crime that we know about. Now, for reasons of time, I've chosen to take fraud as an example, but the internet also has a crime scene for denial of service attacks using malware and Trojan attacks on IT systems and personal computers. We have child exploitation, harassment and stalking. We had a recent case where a man was jailed in breach of a restraining order, having reportedly Googled a victim's name 40,000 times in 1 year. And that was just the scale of their obsession, but obviously the scale of the harassment to the individual involved with some of the other actions they were taking too. You know that serious crime and organised crime and terrorism is enabled by online crime. Money from online fraud is linked to drug importation and terrorist funding. We have planned and prepared online criminals who actually communicate with each other and conspire online across various platforms, often on the dark web, and I want to talk a little more about that later. So what does that mean for policing in those areas? Well, the challenge that we address, as Keith was talking about in terms of the method that we use to address this, the strategy, is under the headings of the four Ps, which is exactly the parallel that we use for terrorism in terms of prevent, pursue, protect and prepare. In terms of pursuing investigation, in planning and preparing terror attacks or serious crime, communication between suspects is often key. Evidence is found on online or on devices. Indeed, serious crime and terrorism investigations that do not involve communications on data, digital data, are rare. But where do we find that communications evidence? Well, we find it on a vast array of devices. We find it on phones, laptops, tablets, each loaded with various apps and increasing levels of encryption. A standard terrorism investigation is likely to have 100 electronic exhibits, and that's an average, not a maximum. It's not a case anymore of a needle in a haystack, but a needle in which haystack? Data quantities are vast and growing. In a recent CT case, we had 117 electronic exhibits containing 4.2 terabytes of information. All very hard to imagine, really, but, for example, the final trimmed-down evidential submission of communications in that case was 150 pages of A3 paper, which is a bit of an irony when you put it on paper, I accept, but it's just trying to give scale to the dimensions of this problem. And the team had to manually review almost 400,000 data files, including videos, photos and messages. And they had to make all that progress within the custody period allowed, which is 14 days. And in a couple of the cases we've seen over the last 6 months, the collection of evidence, which has substantiated the charge to support the arrest, has only occurred on the 13th and 14th day of that 14-day period. So we've seen a compound problem. First of all, large amounts of data, the problem of trawling through it in a custody detention period in a clever and smart way to substantiate a charge to stop a person return to the streets would otherwise have hurt them a great deal. The Met, to help in protecting people and victims, or potential victims, is a partner in the London Digital Security Centre. And that team is made up of policing, the NCA, academia, business, bank, IT companies, cybersecurity companies, who all work together in London to identify vulnerability and provide preventative advice and education to businesses to improve their security and confidence in the online space. We do our best to prevent attacks, to prevent terror attacks or serious offences, and we need to maintain surveillance capacity online. So we argue there should be no dark, ungoverned spaces of the internet where criminals can operate with impunity. And you have seen the announcements by the new government where they intend to take forward legislation to combat this in the next few weeks and months, which we entirely support. The dark web is a facilitator for serious organised crime and financial trading of criminal goods using complex virtual currency. This is an opportunity for law enforcement. It's a virtual gathering of criminals in one space, but it's also a significant challenge to break the codes and identify the real people behind that virtual mask. This is about maintaining and protecting our capabilities and keeping pace with technology, with up-to-date antivirus malware and software. But also it's about the responsibility of communication service providers to help in the law enforcement agencies in keeping people safe, which Keith alluded to earlier. We have a shared responsibility to deny easy access to for terrorists to conspire and to hurt us. Post Snowden, there is a growing appetite to keep information secure and to prevent access to our data. And in this, we are seeing ever-increasing levels of encryption. This, of course, is a double-edged sword. It's good to protect the innocent, and it's not so good, and not so to those that seek to do harm out of reach and out of sight. This is something that we need to really work upon, and is something why I say again, we support the new proposals around legislation in this very, very important area. We would say we don't allow vehicles on our roads without license plates and registered keepers. So why do we think that it's okay for people to travel around the internet with a great anonymity to commit even more serious offences? It's a vitally important thing that we need to work on in the future. In terms of preparing ourselves, we've got to prepare ourselves and develop capabilities to respond. We need to truly understand what is happening. And one of the things that we've done is to invest for the future, despite the fact that we are losing cash. Now, I'm just going to pause here. We got here today Jane Snellgrove. Jane, would you just identify yourself? Jane's the Detective Superintendent in charge of our Falcon unit. We're approaching 300 people in that unit. The reason I've asked Jane to identify herself, one, hopefully you might have a chat with her afterwards. If you've got any reports of fraud, Jane's the person. Otherwise, if you're wearing a uniform, it all comes to you. But more importantly, Jane's made a fantastic start in this first year of our work tackling online crime. And I have to tell you, to make that investment of nearly, let's say, 300 people with an ambition to get 500 people in there has been quite a challenge. There are many requests for our officers to do various things. But for me, it's vitally important that we put our foot in the sand and said that we were going to actually create a critical mass of people. And as we said to Jane right at the beginning of her work, I know that we need a vehicle to fight online crime, but if somebody, I don't yet know whether it's a tank or it's a bicycle, but best we find out this year. And that's what she's been endeavouring to do. But the reason I mentioned the challenge that we have in terms of finance, over the last 3 years, we've lost £600 million. That's about 15% of our budget. I've been trying to provoke a few journalists in the audience to report an exclusive. And the exclusive is that the Met is the only force in the country that has seen a 15% cut in budget, but maintained our police officer numbers, which for us are 32,000, which we're incredibly proud of. But as one of the journalists retorted this morning, who I think is still here, the next 5 years might prove a little more challenging. We managed to take 15% out and still maintain 32,000 cops, but we think we've got to lose another £800 million in the next 3 years, which is a compound effect of £1.4 billion. And that will mean an overall reduction of around 30%. And then the numbers start to get very difficult. That said, we will still try and invest in this vital area. So for me, I think it's an area we'll continue to have to invest in. But I'm only mentioning it because I think it is, as Keith alluded to, vitally important that we work on this together, because we have a common threat and we have a common opportunity. But I'm afraid public servicing is coming under such pressure. And today in this room, I could please you and say we put 20,000 cops into online crime and then go to a meeting in Croydon and hear people complaining about antisocial behaviour, about our sexual offences, which are now two-thirds increased in reporting. There are many areas, including things like terrorism, which are demanding more resources rather than less. So it's a debate that we are trying to have with ourselves, with politicians, with the public and with partners. And it's certainly to be open about that. Yes, we have got a commitment to invest in this area. Yes, we've already put 270 officers in, and we want to get to 320 and then to 500. We've seen some initial success with the officers and staff that Jane leads. We've made over 370 arrests. We've seized over £450,000, and we have 1,400 live investigations. I generally think investigations that wouldn't have been taken forward prior to Jane's work. So I think we're proud of all that. We also know it's still touching and skimming the surface. So I think it's vitally important to continue to invest more people. We'll probably not only need police officers, we'll need new skills. We're giving our officers new skills. They've got cybercrime foundation training. For relatively small numbers, if you think that we have 32,000. And one of our challenges to work out, do we give all our officers and staff training in digital evidence recovery? We can either work through it in a specialised way, and say a small number of people investigate this crime, or we acknowledge that more and more, all of our officers and people will be needing to get involved in this type of evidence recovery, and we need to give them some new skills. We've got to work out a way to improve the way that we retrieve evidence. I've already given you the scale of some of the challenges in the terrorist field, but it's true in some of the serious and organised crime field too. And no matter how many people we put into some of these things, we've got to get a software solution to digitally trawling some of the evidence that we are obtaining. We can't expect people to sit down and just trawl through all this digital evidence, so we've got to find a cleverer way of doing that. We're also investing for the Met in using technology to fight crime, regardless of whether it's online crime or it's other types of crime. We will be giving body-worn video to all our officers within 12 months. At the moment, we have around 1,500 officers in 10 boroughs who are piloting this. It's been incredibly successful. It's reducing our complaints. It's helping in investigations. It's helping in prosecution of things like domestic violence, where we've seen victimless prosecutions, where obvious evidence gathered at the scene is very convincing when presented to a court. And that will cost us £9 million to equip all our officers with those kit. And I'm sure we'll learn lessons along the way. But I think it's going to be a fantastic opportunity to improve the way we do things, to be more transparent and accountable in what we do, in the way that I think we've seen more accountability as we've invested in technology in our custody suites, in interviews. These are, I think, great things and great investments for the future. And I'm sure that we'll see that we'll find new ways of using them as officers get their hands on what the sort of kit I think will make them a lot better. We're also trying to make our officers more efficient in the field. So too often they've had to come back to the office to complete and interact with our IT. So we're giving them all iPads, and within 18 months we'll have had rolled out 20,000 iPads. Simple things like crime recording at the scene, simple things like statement taking at the scene, simple things that statement then becomes a word process document rather than a handwritten document that later has to be transcribed. These are profound changes. And even when we are going to be revenue light at 1.4 billion less, we are to some extent going to be capital rich, because one of the ways we're achieving the revenue savings is to sell at the moment a third of our estate. We have had over 600 buildings. We will at the moment now getting down to just over 400, but we're probably going to approach 100 buildings. That's a problem in some respects, but the opportunity gained by the capital from those sales allows us to invest in things like IT. And we're going to hopefully leave a wise legacy for our colleagues as those succeeds in 10 to 20 years' time, which will have a great IT network built around a mobile office, which officers are able to take the iPad or devices like it into the home and into businesses where we need to be. And we're already seeing savings from that. We're putting CCTV into all our police vans to make sure that the detention of detainees, that we are looking after them properly. We've had too many challenges where people have been arrested and sometimes it is said that they've been abused. If that is the case, then the monitoring of putting CCTV in police vans is a great opportunity to maintain our integrity and make sure that we're doing our job properly. And internally, we're using self-service systems far more to plug the human gap, because we are losing people in our HR and support departments. And apart from considering outsourcing, one of the great benefits is obviously to have self-service, and good IT is a good way of making sure that we have less people doing some of the transactional work, which could otherwise the customer could carry out instead. Externally, we are changing the way that the public can access our services. We need to provide more online availability, as well as the telephone that I've already mentioned. We have about 400 crimes submitted per week online, but it's nowhere near the scale, I think, of what it could be, allowing the victim to not only make the crime report, but also receive advice and get a better service in the future. So for me, there is a challenge in terms of, as we've probably Keith talked about as well, in terms of the scale of the threat and how criminals are committing their crime. There's a great challenge in terms of collecting evidence and making sure that we do that in an efficient way. There's a great challenge in making sure we have enough officers and staff to actually front this up and actually do the investigations, as well as just receive them and record them. But I do also think there are opportunities to work together to share data about the extent of the crime, to pursue and prevent this type of criminality together, and also that we are having to radically think about the way that we equip our staff, partly in technology but also in skills, in a new world in which we expect far more of them rather than some of the routine burglary investigations, which we are seeing at a 30-year low, but we're seeing great challenges in terms of crime types that we are discussing.